Hi folks, Brian Hintney here with another screencast on Windows Azure. This time I'm going to talk about the service configuration file and specifically talk about some strategies about managing both your service configuration file and, if you've got a website you're hosting in Azure, the web.config file, which of course will be part of any ASP.NET website that you're hosting. So let's go ahead and get started, and the first thing I'm going to do is open up Visual Studio. Now, as part of my project here, I've got the ASP.NET website here called World Map Site. And if I scroll down here, of course, it looks like any typical ASP.NET website. And then I also have a web.config file, as you would expect. Now, up here, as part of my cloud service, I've got all the definitions necessary for my service. So I've got all my roles defined, and then of course I've got the service configuration file itself, which I have open here. Now, typically what you would do is you would have a service configuration file contain any settings and connection strings and so on that you need for your web roles and your worker roles. Now, in this case, you could see here I've got in my service configuration file a single role that happens to have the name World Map Site, and then I've defined that the default instance count is just one. And then within the configuration settings, I've got three different settings. The first one is called Data Connection String, and this is just used for my application when it's writing to blobs, tables, and queues inside Azure Storage. It will use this Data Connection String. Then I also have a Diagnostics Connection String. The Diagnostics Connection String is for the Windows Azure Diagnostics Monitor, and we can use that to monitor the health of our applications. We can look at performance counters, get event log information, and that's what we would use to monitor the health of our application. In this case, I've got them both pointing to use the local development storage here. Otherwise, I can put these to point to whatever storage I've got out in the cloud. And then finally, I've got my World Maps database, which is a SQL connection string. In this case, of course, I'm just going to localhost. But if I had this pointed to a database in the cloud, for example, SQL Azure, then I can just come in here and change that connection string, and everything will just work. So this is sort of the ideal situation to be in, where you've got everything configured in one place. The trick is that many components within ASP.NET want to see a connection string specifically in the web.config file. So what a lot of people do is they'll take their connection string here and put it inside their web.config. The problem and the challenge here is if you go to the Azure Development Portal and I come in here, you can see that I've got my site here running and I've got my staging environment. What I can do is I can click Configure, and that will let me change the configuration file on the fly. And I can do this either through the website here or through the Management API, whichever one I'd like to use. So in this case, I could see the same file that I was just editing is right here, and I can change the connection strings, I can change the number of instances, I can do this all either by editing this text file and clicking save, or by using the API to do it programmatically. Well, the challenge that this proposes then is, how do I change it if it's in my web.config, or how do I change a setting? And you can't, because the web.config file is part of your deployment, and you won't be able to change that without redeploying your entire application. So now a lot of people will say, well, that's okay, I don't change my connection strings very often. And that's true. Very infrequently do you end up changing your connection strings. However, it can create somewhat of a deployment challenge then, because for starters, you can't have easy visibility into those settings. But also, if I take and compile an application and I want to test that locally, I'll have those connection strings pointing to my production servers, or I might have them pointing to development servers or staging servers as appropriate. So ideally, what I'd like to do is deploy to staging here and perhaps use a staging storage or staging database, whatever I feel is appropriate. And if I had something deployed here to staging, we would see a little icon here right in the middle of the screen that would allow me to move my staging deployment out into production. And that's a very nice seamless transition that happens. But I can't do that if I'm relying on settings in the web.config, because there's no way then for me to change those settings. So in this case, I'd be kind of stuck if I'm using different connection strings. I could have different deployments and compile it differently, but the better solution is to really have everything in the service configuration file. So depending on the complexity of your app will make this process either very easy or very difficult. So let's look at how I solved some of the typical problems. Going back into Visual Studio here, what I'm going to do is open up the web.config file, and I'm going to come down here to the membership provider section. And I use all of the ASP.NET membership providers within my application. Except here, typically, where I'm declaring my membership default provider, typically I would put SQL membership provider here. Except in this case, what I'm going to do is instead of tell it to use the SQL membership provider, I'm going to tell it to use the WorldMaps membership provider, which is a class that I wrote that derives from the SQL membership providers. And I'll do the same thing for the profile provider and the role provider. Now, if I go ahead and look at the code for these providers, I can come in here and see that my WorldMaps membership provider does inherit from the SQL membership provider and the role provider from the SQL role provider and so on. So right now, all of these will behave exactly like their SQL-based classes because I'm not changing the behavior here at all. Now, all of these inside the web.config do rely on a connection string, which you do have to declare inside your application. So I'll come back up to the connection strings section. And you can see that I've declared the WorldMaps database connection string, and this is a requirement for the ASP.NET membership providers. But instead of actually providing that connection string here, I'm just going to give it a name of placeholder only. And again, this is only here because the SQL membership providers will attempt to look up this name. The trick then is for us to come in here and then override that. So instead of looking to the web.config, we instead look to the service configuration file. And this has been discussed for a long time out in the blog, and there's a number of blog posts on this that deal with this situation, because some people want to pull connection strings dynamically and so on and not have them directly in the web.config. So what we can do is we can override the initialize method, and this will get called by our membership provider, and we'll just do a base.initialize, and during this process it will pull that connection string placeholder only, and then we just want to override that. So what I'll first do is we'll declare a connection string here, and I'll just go to the role environment and grab that connection string from the service configuration file. And once we do that, I've got my connection string. And we're going to use a little bit of reflection to update that property, which is a, well, it's actually a backing field called SQL connection string. And we'll just go ahead and overwrite that then with our connection string that we grabbed out of our role environment. And so this is a great trick I picked up from somebody out there in the blog, and it's a good way to dynamically have connection strings if you're using the SQL membership providers. And so we could do this for the role provider and then the profile provider as well. And every time that these classes get instantiated, for the first time that they get initialized anyway, we'll come in here and put the right connection string in here. So that's how we can get around this specifically for the ASP.NET membership providers. Next up, let's look at using link to SQL and a good practice for that. If I come down to my models here, I'll open up my WorldMaps data model. And in this case, I've got a bunch of tables. And being a somewhat lazy programmer at times, what I do is I'll just drag all these tables on here. And I like to use, if I'm creating administration pages on my site, and I'll show you how this works later on, I like to use dynamic data for that, because it can scaffold my system very easily. And as an administrator, I can then go in and edit data, and I don't have to build this complex UI to do it for me. And I'll use link to SQL to quickly get a data model up and running. So I've done that here. And if I look at the properties that link to SQL creates for me, you could see that. Let's just drag another table on here. We'll just drag the ASP.NET users on here. And what this is going to do is you're going to see that it's going to update the connection string. It's going to try to put one on here. If we look at the properties here, you'll see that just by editing this DBML file, that it created a connection string by default for me inside the web.config. And I can see that by going back to the web.config file now, and we can even see that connection string that got put in here for us automatically. If you remember before, we had only our simple placeholder here, but now we have our WorldMaps connection string. And what we'll do is we'll go back to the DBML file, and I'm going to tell it to not use a connection string. And so essentially, I'm just going to say none on this. And the benefit to doing that, in fact, if I put that back in there and we go look at the designer-generated code, what we're going to see is there's a default constructor that gets made for us here, right here. And so anytime we new up an instance of our WorldMaps data model without using a different constructor, by default, then it's going to go ahead and grab our WorldMaps connection string that it added for us. So I've got one of two things I can do. I can either never use the default constructor, I could delete it from here directly, but the better way to do that is to just come back to your DBML file and just tell it don't use any connection string. I'll provide that, you don't need to do that. And then if I go back into the designer file, we'll see that in this case that it removed the default constructor. So now there's no way to new up a new instance of this without providing a connection directly into one of the constructors. Of course, then you might say, well, then anytime I use my data model, I'm going to have to constantly provide the connection string. Well, what we could do is we can use a metadata class to do that work for us. So what I've done is I've created a WorldMaps data model metadata class. And what this is going to do is, in this case, we'll create a partial class. So this will get merged at runtime. And then I also change the way some of these appear, some of the leaderboard information and some of the user information and so on. All of this is done for dynamic data, and I could talk more about that later on. But the key thing I want to talk about here is adding the constructor then. If you remember the default constructor or the parameter list constructor that Link2SQL created for us took the connection string out of the web.config. But in this case, what I'm doing is I'm just doing the same thing, but instead of pulling the connection string from the web config, I'm pulling it from the role environment, and we're going to get the WorldMapsDB directly from it. Now, the advantage of doing this here inside my metadata is that I can then go ahead and change my Link2SQL class at any time, and I don't have to worry about, you never want to touch the designer files because obviously those are volatile and they can change very easily. So now anytime I call the default constructor on my data context, we'll pull that connection string directly from the service configuration file. Now in this case, what I'm using the Link2SQL class for is in a fairly limited way, but what I've done is I've got an admin page where I'd like to have all my tables that I can get into very easily. Let me show you what this looks like. If I come back here to my site, this is part of the admin section, and so this is not publicly accessible by users, but I can come in here into any one of these tables and I can look at, for example, leaderboard information and I can edit these directly within here. So instead of having to come in and create an interface for me to use this just for administration purposes, dynamic data serves this purpose really well, and it will honor all of the constraints and everything else that's within the data model. So it's a really easy way to get up and running. And we have two choices with that. We can either use Link2SQL or the Entity Framework. In this case, I'm just using Link2SQL. So if we go back to Visual Studio, you can see that in the admin section here, which is locked down, I just put all the dynamic data files in a folder within here. So in order to even get to this section, you have to be logged in as an administrator. And then when we set up the routes, we'll just tell it which class to use. In this case, our WorldMaps data context. So what I'm doing here in the global ASAX, where I'm setting up the routes for dynamic data, there's a number of ways to do this. I've got two things I can do, is I can go out and get that connection string from my role environment and pass that into the WorldMaps data context. I don't need to do that though, because I created already a parameterless constructor that will automatically do this. So this saves me the step of always having to go out to the role environment for that. The final thing that I need to do in order to get everything running is to make sure that all of the custom ADO.NET stuff that I'm using goes specifically to use the role environment instead of using something from the web.config. So within my data classes themselves, in this case, I use a DB con string string here, which holds a connection string, and I have a static constructor here. So this will get called when this class is invoked for the first time, and the DB con string then will be populated from the role environment. And so now all my methods here, which call my stored procedures and all the other custom code that I wrote, will use the connection string from the role environment class instead. So the end result here is that the entire application now, if we go back and look at the service configuration, there's only one place inside the entire application for all my roles. In this case, I only have my website role here in this project, but I do also have a worker role that does processing, but I just don't have it running right now. And that uses the same paradigm where we have a single setting here called WorldMapsDB, and it can pull that setting from any role, not relying on the web.config, even though I've got my custom code written, and I'm also using the SQL membership providers and Link to SQL, and all of that is taking this into account. So virtually any situation you can work around, just with a little bit of creativity and get your settings in the right place. There are certainly times when you do want your settings in the web.config, but in my case, having them in the service configuration makes a lot more sense. So thanks for watching. I hope this was helpful. If you have any feedback, feel free to leave it on my blog. And until next time, happy coding.